Yasodhanandana Prachachanaranjana. Yamunatira Panachari. Yamunatira Panachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Krishna Padaya, Krishna Prasthaya, Bhutale, Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, Tinamine, Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Gauravani, Pracharine, Nivashe, Sunyavadi, Paschachade, Shatarine, Jai Shri Krishna, Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Shri Advaita, Gadadhar, Shivasadi, Gauravaktivinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Panchakalpatrubhyas Chakripa Sindhubhyeva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaha. So today's verse is 7th canto, 14th chapter, text 9. So we can chant responsibly. Oh, the chapter is entitled Ideal Family Life. Migosta kara markaku Sharishrip kaga makshikaha Atmana putravat pasyet Tairesham antaram kiyat Mirgoshta kara murkaku Sari shrip kaka makshikaha Atmanaha putra vat pasyet Tairisham antaram kiyat Mirgostra kara markaku Shari shrip kaga makshikaha Atmana putravat pasyet Tairisham antaram kiyat. Please chant. Mirgoshtra kara markaku Shari shrip kaga makshikaha Atmana putravat pasyet Tairesham antaram kiyat. Virgosha kara marka ku. Sari shrip kaga makshika. Atmana putra patsyet. Tiresham ansaram kiyat. Virgoshtra kara marka ku. Sari shrip kaga makshika. Atmana putra patsyet. Tere sham antaram kiyat. Virgoshtra kara marka ku. Sari shrip kaga makshika. Atmana putra patsyet. Tair esham antaram kiyat. Virgoshtra kara marka ku. Sari shrip kaga makshika. Atmana putra patsyet. Tairesham antaram kiyat. So, the word-for-word translation by Srila Prabhupada. Mirga, deer. Ashri, camels. Kara, asses. Marka, monkeys. Dehi, is it? Aka, the small print is getting hard. Okay. Aka, mice. Sari shrip, snakes. Baga, birds. Makshikaha, flies. Atmanaha, of oneself. Putravat, like the suns. Pasyet, one should see. Tai, with those suns. Esham, of these animals. Antaram, differences. Ikayat, how little. Translation. I'm usually working under a very bright light, so if I don't have the bright light, I'm suffering. Okay. One should treat animals such as deer, camels, asses, monkeys, mice, snakes, birds, and flies exactly like one's own son. How little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. So the purport by Srila Prabhupada. One who is in Krishna consciousness understands that there is no difference between the animals and the innocent children in one's home. Even in ordinary life, it is our practical experience that a household dog or cat is regarded on the same level as one's children without any envy. Like children, the unintelligent animals are also sons of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore, a Krishna conscious person, even though a householder, should not discriminate between children and poor animals. Unfortunately, modern society has devised many means for killing animals in different forms of life. For example, in the agricultural fields, there may be many mice, flies, and other creatures that disturb production, and sometimes they are killed by pesticides. In this sense, however, such killing is forbidden. Sorry, in this verse. Every living entity should be nourished by the food given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Human society should not consider itself the only enjoyer of all the properties of God. Rather, men should understand that all the other animals also have a chance, also have a claim to God's property. In this verse, even the snake is mentioned, indicating that a householder should not be envious even of a snake. If everyone is fully satisfied by eating food that is a gift from the Lord, why should there be envy between any living being and another? In modern days, people are very much inclined towards communist ideas of society, but we do not think that there can be any better communistic idea than that which is explained in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Even in the communistic countries, the poor animals are killed without consideration, although they also should have the right to take their allotted food with which to live. Magyan Timurandasya Ganjana Shlakaya Chakshur and Militaniana Tasmai Shri Guru Venama. So this is still Narada Muni talking, and he's making a statement, and in particular, how little difference there actually is between children and these innocent animals. So, a child may be related or is related to both parents, the mother and father. And an animal is also related to both its parents. There's a mother and a father that the animal had. So, Srila Prabhupada gives a reason for there being very little difference between these animals and one's children. And that is that both the animals and the children have got a relationship with Krishna. So Krishna himself, he makes this relationship quite clear. There's a fantastic verse in Bhagavad Gita which he's stating this, that clarifies his relationship. And it's from 14:4. He says, "It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the seed-giving father." So it's quite clear. So the relation to Krishna is such that he's the original father of both the human child and the animal child. And I'm saying animal child because of the relation to parents. So both the animals and the human child have also got a common relation to material nature. And the fact this commonality is put in Srila Prabhupada's words. He says, due to the mother material nature and Krishna's seed-giving process. This is in this particular verse where Krishna is explaining how he's the seed-giving father. So the process refers to the living entities coming in various forms according to their past deeds at the time of creation. So it's been going on all this time, the relationship to Krishna. So now, in the present situation where Narada Muni is talking, we can consider the situation of a household. So in a household, the householder, he's going to, or both persons in the household, they're going to view the child and the animal in the house in a particular way. So in one household, an animal such as a cat or a dog will be viewed on the same level as the child. And you can see this because a child's going to be bathed and dressed and fed. And animal, same thing. You'll see that the animal will be bathed, given a collar, brushed, and fed. So, you know, very similar. In fact, I recall one year my husband and I were visiting one household in Johannesburg, and there were two huge, magnificent, I think they called Doberman dogs, you know, black and gleaming, you know, the picture of good health. And the children too just looked exactly like that, the picture of good health. So you could see that great care was being given to both. So now, there's a dictionary definition that's given for having life. And that definition is that the entity that's living is able to take in food, is able to grow, and also adapt to its surroundings, and also reproduce. So that's the definition of having life, according to the dictionary. So now, Srila Prabhupada in this verse, he's actually pointing out that there's a view that some householders are going to hold about the child and the household animal. That view that, you know, they're equivalent or they on the same level, and he calls it a view that's without any envy. So this is interesting, because what it means is that the householder doesn't have any ill feelings towards other creatures. So for a Krishna conscious householder, there's actually a scriptural injunction. One shouldn't be discriminating between the child and the animal, which is very interesting. And Srila Prabhupada actually says, poor animals, means they're at the mercy of the view that the householder is holding. So one can also contrast this position with a householder who doesn't hold that view. So it may be a household where there actually is some ill feeling towards creatures. So I'm going to give an example. I know some persons, when I was growing up, what they would do, there was a bottle of insecticide, some sort of spray. So their practice was to close all the windows, spray every room with the insecticide, and then leave the house for several hours so that upon their return, it would be free of any flies. So you could see the flies, you know, lying on the ground. So, you know, there's a householder with ill feeling towards other creatures. You know, I mean, truly. So Srila Prabhupada even puts it can be even on a much broader scale where somebody who's responsible for growing foodstuffs is actually applying pesticides to those crops so that all the creatures, you know, be they flies, be they beetles, be they ladybugs, be they grasshoppers, be they mice, everything gets devastated in that piece of land. So anyway, the householder, the view that the householder holds is what determines how they're actually managing both the household and also the if they're involved in farming the production of crops. So there's another example that there can be householders who have this dislike of other beings. And that is, or they may even not like the advantage that an entity in a different body has. I mean, this is called the ill will, that enviousness. So in some countries, it's a practice that persons may have hunting dogs. So they actually take the dogs out while they're on horseback, and they engage in hunting down a fox. So now you understand that there's ill will towards the creature, because the view that's been held is that the fox is cunning or it's sly. So even to be thinking like that, it's ill will and dislike of some supposed advantage that that poor creature has. So there's mention in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and I don't know, perhaps this was done in India, I'm not familiar with it, but some persons even use their, instead of horses, they're using mules to go into the forest to also kill animals unnecessarily, although it's not specified what animals are killed in that particular circumstance. At least I'm thinking of the British practice of the hunting dogs. So now, going back to the statement made by Narada Muni that how little difference there actually is between children and these innocent creatures, it's already pointing to the fact that it's actually forbidden to kill these innocent creatures. So Srila Prabhupada's expanding on this idea, because he says that all creatures are allowed nourishment by food that's given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it means that they're allowed to live, they're allowed to grow, they're allowed to take their share of whatever foodstuff is in the environment that they're in. So the implication is that humans are not the ones with the exclusive right to Lord Krishna's property. So others also have a claim to that property, even though they may not have the advantages that a human has of managing things, using intelligence to manage resources in a particular way. You know, having a larder stocked with things, or an animal may not have that, but has a right to whatever's in their environment. So there are three characteristics that are mentioned. There's a very nice verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the third canto in the 16th chapter in the 27th verse, where Maitreya Muni is talking to Vidura regarding humans. So here's something he's going to mention about humans. The creation of the human beings who are in the ninth rotation of species is that they are one species only, and they stock their eatables in their belly. In the human race, the mode of passion is very prominent. Humans are always busy in the midst of miserable life, but they think themselves happy in all respects. So we can take this statement, which is describing humans. They're storing their foodstuff in their belly. They are also thinking of themselves happy, even if the whole situation is completely miserable, they're thinking they're happy. So these are some characteristics of human beings that we can contrast it with, and they're also very much in the mode of passion. Here's a description of animals, and this is from the Srimad Bhagavatam in the third canto, the 10th chapter, in the 26th verse. this is animals. They are all extensively foolish and ignorant. The characteristics of those of the lower species of life, of which there are 28 varieties, they are all extensively foolish and ignorant. They know their desirables by smell, but are unable to remember anything within the heart. So very interesting. Everything's dependent just on the the likes or the dislikes are just dependent on smell. But notice the human's likes or dislike, it's actually coming from the heart. There's ill will towards other creatures. But for the animals, it's just their sense of smell. They're dictating, oh, I like this, don't like this. So you notice a dog, even, you know, if you're walking in the street, somebody who's got their dog on the leash, the dog will approach one looking to smell first. You know, do I like this entity? Don't I like this entity? The smell is all that dictates. So that's all the discrimination there is there, the sense of smell. So now, this is interesting because human beings, they actually may forget something of their relationship with Lord Krishna or the nature of Lord Krishna, but when their heart receives some mercy through the grace of Lord Krishna, then they're able to understand something of Krishna's position. Now, this understanding in the heart is, of course, it's only for those whose hearts are somewhat open. There's those who are demoniac, like those with the ill will, or they actually are non-devotional. So their heart won't be able to receive some kindness coming from Krishna where there comes to be some understanding of their relationship with him. So Krishna describes something of the heart of the human in one of the verses in Bhagavad Gita. I'm going to read it because it's interesting and somewhat connected to what we're discussing. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Bahuni me vyatitani janmani tava karyuna Arjuna, tani aham veda sarvani natvam veta parantapa. So the personality of Godhead said, many, many births you and I have passed. I can remember all of them, but you cannot, O subduer of the enemy. So Krishna has the particular characteristic of never forgetting himself. It's unique to him. So he's infallible, even though he's in contact with material nature. But the human, in his one species, he has one particular remarkable ability. He's got the ability to be able to remember that connection, that relationship with Krishna. So that's very unique to the human species. So this is the particular difference that's between the human and the animal. And it's this ability within the heart that the human being has, that ability to understand Krishna as being the supplier of the foodstuffs and the proprietor of everything. So that's very unique to the human heart. And by implication, the human can understand his relationship with Krishna as distinct from the deer or the camel. And these animals, they have some external characteristics. They're lacking this particular one. Their heart cannot actually comprehend, you know, who's the ultimate supplier of the foodstuff, or they can't understand that Krishna's always remembering his previous births, but for them, there's not that ability. So all that they are endowed with is something like the, this is a description from Srimad Bhagavatam 2, the deer or the camel, they're endowed with two hooves. The ass with one hoof. The monkey or dog or fox with five nails in a claw. And the bird, be it a hawk or a vulture, they just fall into the category of those that fly. And the snake is all on its own category. So They all of them lack this ability to remember within the heart. So that's the distinguishing, or the main difference that distinguishes the human from the animal. So it's an internal difference. So now, by virtue of the householder's remembering ability within the heart, he's able to remember this relationship with Krishna, and that prevents him from being overwhelmed with this hatred, this ill will, or this pride, or this ignorance, which then would prevent him from seeing with compassion the innocence of the animals. So that's the important part. And now, one can acknowledge one interesting thing, though, that every human being, because I described the two different kinds of householders and how they can hold different views, every human being actually has an ignorant darkness by which, and this is the words of the Srimad Bhagavatam, by which he acts as a fool. So that's actually the human being. And Maitreya Rishi, when he's discussing with Vidura, he actually says it's the human beings are the ninth creation of Lord Krishna, and in the sixth creation, what actually is created by Krishna is a covering, the darkness of ignorance, which actually covers every human being. So you can see that that's actually an understandable position for persons to be ignorant in their outlook towards other creatures. Now, this ignorance then takes that form of the human being or somebody in the human species wanting to control material nature, because they're not even understanding. They don't hold that understanding of how they're connected to material nature or how they're connected to Krishna until some kindness from Krishna comes towards them. So now this means that the householders who have ill will towards the advantages of others, these creatures, you know, be they, they've got like, you know, special claws or they've got a special hoof or they're actually not able to perceive the innocence of the animal. And so humans are masters of the material world, but because of this cloud of ignorance that was part of Krishna's creation, they have the false impression of being masters even of the poor creatures. So that's not completely accurate. And the proper understanding then comes to be that very nice mention in Sri Upanishad, that everything animate or inanimate that is within the universe is controlled and owned by the Lord. And one should therefore accept only those things necessary for himself, which are set aside as his quota, and one must not accept things knowing well to whom they belong. So this was finally that understanding can come when that ability to remember the relationship with Lord Krishna is allowed by Lord Krishna. And then there isn't this, that ill will can move out of the way, and the proper understanding of the right of every creature to have its share of the foodstuffs that are provided naturally by Lord Krishna and their right to it is really understood. So these are some short thoughts on this particular verse. If anybody has something to add to the discussion.
So, the obvious question that it comes, you know, is the experience that we have in terms of dealing with creatures. Couple of things, you know, specifically with mice, cockroaches, rats. Well, what to speak of bed bugs and mosquitoes. But in one sense, you see that there's a differentiation because you also hear that there is some quotations in the scriptures about, you know, creatures that have envious nature that you're allowed to kill. For example, there's examples of Srila Prabhupada, you know, after the mosquito bites, you know, then he ordered his servant to kill it. And the example of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati killing a snake or being pleased when the snake got killed. And Prabhupada, you know, points out that he finds a quotation that there is that even a sadhu becomes happy when a snake, or you know, like a poisonous snake, and a scorpion, and some other creature gets killed because they have an envious nature. They, by nature, wants to bite. And then you have these creatures that by nature, you know, it's not that their allotted food is your blood. So, you know, you have to protect, you know, yourself. Now, mice is different, you know. I mean, you can see those creatures are very innocent, especially when you capture them. You know, they're so vulnerable and so afraid and so, you know, that it breaks your heart, you know, when you see them suffering like that, so afraid. So there's a different thing. However, you know, they're very muchy, you know, so they contaminate things. So you see the situation here in the temple, that the decision has been made, and in every temple that we, you know, have lived in, you see the same thing, that there's some arrangement, you know, to take care of eliminating these creatures. Sometimes going as far as, you know, throwing poison at them or poison the area so get rid of them. Cockroaches and things like that. The reason you do that is because one thing is that we recently have a huge bill or a huge, punishment from the city because they saw some mouse droppings in the kitchen. So we have to call the big exterminator to come and do something about it, you know. So, you know, there's these things that we're forced to do in order to keep some sort of a healthy, clean environment and deter, you know, creatures to come into your space. Because although they're innocent, you know, they're contaminate things, contaminate the food, you know, they bring some disease and things like that. So what do you do? I mean, your heart breaks, you know, sometimes thinking, especially with mouses. I'm not so sympathetic with cockroaches. I'm not so sympathetic, obviously, with the ones that are feeding off you. But obviously, a sadhu is in another level than, you know, some. I can understand that I still have some envy towards certain creatures, but, you know, can you comment?
well, since you were describing a lot the temple situation, so the emphasis in devotional life is cleanliness. So that means that there should be regular maintenance for everything. So it means that floors need to be swept, fabric needs to be washed, bodies need to be cleansed, surfaces need to be wiped, and this needs to be done regularly. Now, if we take into account that one of the distinguishing characteristics of an animal in whichever form, I mean, here there was everything from mice, flies, which were, you mentioned mice, and you mentioned other creatures that were more microscopic. So in all cases, the characteristic of those creatures is that their way of distinguishing what they like or don't like is based on smell. So if one knows that, then the way to combat the presence of those creatures is to have something in each case that the particular creature by smell doesn't like. So rather than taking the step of putting something there that will appear attractive and then the poor creature ingests it and is forced to give up that body. So because it's forced, it sort of also interrupts the natural moving to the next body, because that creature then has to return to that body to finish its proper term of life in that form. So rather than causing that much disruption, the better thing to do is to actually place things that one knows that will not appeal to the sense of smell of the particular creature. So, for instance, apart from first, there has to be the cleansing. So, for instance, one can use a soap that has eucalyptus oil in it, and that's going to deter flies and any crawling insect. They'll stay away from that space because the sense of smell, it doesn't appeal. So if one's using that on surfaces, already you've got your surfaces creature free. They're not going to be coming there because they're going by the sense of smell. If it's a case of something like cockroaches, it's supposed to be that one can put out bay leaves like in a kitchen or a pantry. So bay leaves are particularly objectionable. I don't know what the deterrent by sense of smell for mice is. For mosquitoes, same thing. One can actually have an oil that contains, there's certain essential oils I'd have to look up, but there's a formula, and citronella is one of the particular things that's completely objectionable to mosquitoes. So one applies that oil on one's extremities. I mean, no mosquito is going to come near, because what's desirable or undesirable for the creature is determined by the sense of smell. Oh, citronella. Oh, no. So the creature's not going to come to that body. So that's the better way to go, to actually find out what the particular entity's sense of smell doesn't find appealing, rather than shortening the lifespan of that creature, forcing the creature to return to that body and have to go through the required time period in that body. So that's the better way. That's the more intelligent way. If, however, there's like already a major infestation, like let's say you mentioned microscopic creatures. So if it's microscopic creatures, then the cleansing, that one does may have to be like much more thorough. So steaming, so water in a vapor form is stronger than just the plain water. So that will help to cleanse surfaces where there already may be some microscopic creatures. So I don't know particularly what's a deterrent for those creatures, but I would imagine something very similar to mosquitoes, citronella, eucalyptus. Yeah. So that's the better way to do it, the much better way to do it. Because there's a certain element of cruelty, because as Srila Prabhupada puts it, poor animals. On the other hand, you mentioned the examples where, you know, there's some satisfaction, Srila Prabhupada saying, okay, you know, the mosquito is bitten, may be killed. Well, that's a case of, you know, already the creature just by nature can't control. It's drawn to blood. So, you know, it senses smell, there's blood. It has to act that way. It can't act any other way. So, I mean, the better thing is to have mosquito screens and, you know, keep the creatures out. It's some way that they can't enter the space. So all those measures that one can do to discourage the creatures from being in that space, that's the better way to do it. If, however, one hasn't maintained the cleanliness, if one hasn't had the screens, one hasn't utilized the soap with something in it that is going to be objectionable to the sense of smell of the creature, then one has to physically remove. So if it's a mouse, you know, one puts down a humane trap where the creature comes in. It's nothing that's going to harm. It's like a little house. You make sure you check the trap frequently so the poor creature's not dying of fright, and then you take the mouse to the field. So that, you know, more humane ways of doing things.
Another way to deal with these unwanted animals is with compassion. A lot of people, when they see a rat, they think, arr, and it will kill the rat. But rather than having that be your first reaction is to love the rat, and then you kill it. You use compassion. This is like when we come to Krishna consciousness. Krishna doesn't just attack our sinful life right away. He gives us mercy. He gives us prasadam, and he encourages us along the program, and then he attacks our sinful life. So this is the process of having compassion and love as your first, and then not to feel that anger against that animal, because it's not responsible for contaminating your food. It doesn't know. It just is doing what's natural to it. So to have compassion and give it some grace, and then that way when you kill it, it can go on to a higher form because it's had that mercy and that compassion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, of course, it wouldn't be consistent if one is showing compassion and giving prasadam to a creature and then thereafter eliminating its life. That wouldn't be consistent. So the better thing to do is, if one's taken the course of being compassionate, continue being compassionate. So like in India, in the Juhu Beach temple, I remember, you know, different occasions visiting. And of course, early morning is when, you know, you'll see the creatures, because it isn't light yet. It's a little dark. I mean, sort of that Mangalati time. And you'll see huge rats this size, you know, heading towards where the kitchen area is. And I think, they're so big. But they are getting, if they're actually entering like the grain bins and it's, you know, the boga, it's not been offered yet, that actually has been a nuisance. But so they, again, you know, preventative measures have to be done, you know, containers that can't be accessed by the creatures. So one just has to be a little bit ahead of things. But then, if you're going to be compassionate, you will leave out some prasadam for those creatures so that even they can have some transcendental benefit. But no doubt they're managing to find something in that environment, otherwise they wouldn't be existing there. But it wouldn't be consistent to give the prasadam and then, you know, find some means to kill the creature. That wouldn't quite be the best thing. The best thing would be to somehow find the trap, collect the creature and put it in some wild area where it can, you know, forage in a more natural setting rather than, you know, trying to collect grains that are, you know, going to be used for making offerings. So always the more compassion form, and being consistent with that. You can't actually move from compassion to then killing. It wouldn't be correct. So.
Hare Krishna, Mother Krishna, Arshana Master. Thank you for your class, and thank you for putting on that effort. And I remember when we used to do class before, at least I would write down my notes, but I would never remember them because I never liked to look at my notes because as soon as I looked at my notes, you know, people would fall asleep. So I never took my eyes off of, you know, devotees. I would usually raise my voice, but thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice points. I didn't have an opportunity to organize my notes, so I'll try my best to remember. And maybe you can answer and expand on some of the points. You know, in the circus, basically, there's wild animals, but they're trained. They're trained to become nice animals. You know, the circus animals? And so we could see that, and that's what basically Srila Prabhupada did with us. he came to the West to train us, basically. And so we see, I mean, when you turn on the news, you can see that people kill each other over the most ridiculous things. I'm not sure if you see some of the headlines, but people kill each other over the most. I mean, I would mention something recently, but it's so ridiculous. I'm not. So my one joke I really appreciated, and I'll spend, is kind of related to my question. There was this one joke that I heard somebody, some actor played Mark Twain, and he said some very illuminating point, even though he said it as a joke. He essentially said that if you put a lion, a tiger, a bear, a deer, and a rabbit in one room together for an hour, they'll all, you know, get along and be peaceful. He said if you put a Hindu, a Christian, and a Jew and a Muslim in one room together, no specimen to be found. And so we could see that you were making a point that householders, not just householders, but when there's, you made the stint that when there's envious feelings or something, that when there's ill feelings towards someone, that's kind of in the animal consciousness, basically, if there's any ill feelings towards others. And so we could see that Maya is already training us to be animals, basically. She gives us so many thoughts, you know, you're better than this person, or, you know, be envious of this person, or get revenge on this person. So she's already training us free from charge. You know, so these thoughts, and maybe we don't consider them, but usually when we criticize somebody, it's obviously, there are only really three aspects of criticism, either pride, envy, or vengeance. That's pretty much covers it. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, basically the best way to train someone is to respect people, not just respect people, but respect people who don't respect you, and you're going to get a lot of that. And so we can see in the material world, if we don't respect people who don't respect us, we'll act like a wild animal. Let me remove them from my life. Let me exterminate them. Let me get the pesticides. You know, either through slander or if I'm in a position of authority, get them out of my way. So we could see that. So my question is what are some steps we could do to kind of recognize this mentality in us, is that Maya is training us, you know, at every single moment. She's filling our thoughts with so many animalistic ideas. Pride, envy, vengeance, and lust is another category. You know, so one thing, one last point that's kind of relevant to my question is that one thing I really appreciate about Bhaktisiddhanta's writings is that the name of the Lord he used the most was Hari. If you're looking at his writings, so the word Hari means he who removes all obstacles or takes away. He removes our obstacles to spiritual progress. And a lot of times, we think, you know, if, you know, I have this wisdom and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or any of the teachings tell me I should react like this in a provoking situation. But that's not the determining factor. Having wisdom is the determining factor. The real determining factor of how we react in a certain circumstance is Sam Siddhir Hari Toshna. If we please the Lord, then the Lord will give us the inspiration to react in a way that's beneficial for ourselves and others. And so what are some steps we could do to please the Lord that, you know, not that I just have this wisdom, because we could see that usually the Lord doesn't give you the inspiration to react in a certain way if we're slandering people on a daily basis due to pride, We're envious of people. Yeah, we may not see people, you know, they may not see you talking about them behind your back, but the Lord sees us. The Lord and Maya sees you. And then we don't make that connection that when I'm in a provoking circumstances, why am I acting in such a way like an animal with this, you know, much rage? But we don't make that connection. So there's so many verses in this regard. So what are some steps we could do to keep this in mind on a daily basis? I know my notes was kind of, I didn't have an opportunity to open up, but maybe you could extract something out of all that garbage I just mentioned, so like honey from a flower, so hopefully you can.
Thank you. I saw you moving in three different areas. So the first one, yes, the notes are helpful because of stage fright. The second thing of, my spiritual master says that, you know, in Kali Yuga, the memory's not so good. So one has to rely on some written material. And the second thing of, you know, finding that one actually is carrying hatred within the heart or, you know, there's some pride factor. And this manifests itself particularly if, we perceive some wrongdoing on the part of somebody else towards us. So, you know, from this particular verse today and the discussion on it, the important factor was to remember that what is destroying that is the kindness coming from Krishna, and that kindness can come through devotees too, because they are representing Krishna. So if one is actually just hearing and trying to apply the direction that's coming, then that's pushing pride and hatred aside. So that's the most important step, to just be willing to that kindness that's coming one's way, to try and apply it. If one doesn't try to apply it, the tendency will be to stay with what's one's unfortunately got, that ignorant part, which all of us have, which is, you know, staying with the pride or staying with the anger or staying with the feelings of vengeance. but because, you know, I'll tell you from personal experience that if one stays with that in some way, even in a subtle way, there's some reaction one has to suffer. So, I mean, I'll tell you a personal experience. once in my heart, I was a little unhappy with the devotee's way of dealing with me, like a little unhappy, but, you know, I acknowledged that I was unhappy, but to myself, and I thought, what were the best ways to deal with it? And in future, if that particular behavior came, how I would manage it, because I thought part of my unhappiness is that I didn't respond to it in a way that also made me feel at peace. So I would also have to go past my natural tendency to behave in a particular way and behave in a way that I wouldn't normally behave, but was necessary for that situation. So once I understood that, you know, I felt more peaceful. But in my mind, there remained a little unhappiness. And one day I was, I'd finished some service in the Naperville temple, making some vases for the Sunday feast. And for some reason that day, I did it much later in the day than I normally did it. So I was cycling back and I cycled past this house and this huge black dog, like, you know, a little disheveled looking, had its teeth, it was sitting on the porch, it spotted me on the bicycle, it opened its mouth, the teeth were like that huge, it, you know, displayed its teeth to full effect, and then to my surprise, it started heading for me. So I thought, oh, I'm finished, I'm going to be mauled. So indeed, the dog, you know, headed and grabbed my leg and held on. And, you know, that forced me to come off the bike because, you know, you can't cycle if the leg's being grabbed. And so, you know, I fell on the grass and I was lying there and I thought, oh, clearly I'm in some way responsible for this reaction, you know. And anyway, somebody came from across the street who spotted it in the dark, backed off. But I realized that, you know, one really has to work very, very hard. You can't even maintain some negative feeling towards a devotee. So, and I understood that, you know, even though I was doing the work, there's still in the heart, there was some unhappiness. So, and maybe a little bit of anger. So I understood, you know, you have to keep working. And it's internal work because externally, you know, I did the right thing, but the internal, it took time. So I saw it as a manifestation of, you know, you're getting some creature attacking because in one's heart, one's feeling that, you know, want to attack in some way. So it's very essential that one takes the directions that one's getting and tries to apply them and does it very consistently so that you're wearing down that ignorant part of the mind. You have to wear it down. You can't go with it. You can't attend to it. You have to keep wearing it down. Wear it down, wear it down, wear it down. So just consistency. So.
Thank you for mentioning that point. That reminded me of, I think that's one of the most essential points that I really appreciated. Somebody said something similar years ago that I'll never forget, and I really appreciated the same thing you just said. It was actually Sir Krishnasmaran Prabhu. He burned his hand, and basically I never forgot this and always remembered it. He said, when there's any accident you have, you know, it's always connected usually to some offense, some, you know, aparat. And I got that experience washing dishes with the knives. So that's why I usually wash the knives first, put them aside, and then I can make the apparatus with no major reaction. So and one small question in that regard. I mean, as practicing devotees, we're supposed to be developed in this higher taste. So is that, would you say, is that one criterion why we're not, let's say when we read the scriptures, oh, this is like so boring, I can't read this, you know, Prabhupada's books are boring, this is boring. Is it a result of, you know, not being grateful and a result of offenses, potentially? Or what is your perspective on that? You know, we're supposed to obviously be developing higher tastes, and if we're not developing any happiness for Prabhupada's books or appreciating devotees, then obviously our main source of happiness is materialism, so... Is that a result of ingratitude, you know, apparatus? And...
No, not necessarily. It's part of the process to develop a taste. The taste is not naturally there. And in fact, devotional life is considered to be like a little bit like poison in the beginning. That's how Srila Prabhupada says. It becomes nectar at the end, but in the beginning it's a bit poisonous. Because you are indeed, you've got a taste for all the material things. So to develop that taste, it takes time. And so the hearing and like the interacting with devotees, it increases the taste. So one just has to consistently keep hearing. So it may not be so easy to sit down and just read. So hearing is very good. Because you are, the transcendental messages are entering the heart. And as they keep entering, some enthusiasm keeps growing. And with increased enthusiasm, eventually further down the line, real taste develops. So it's not there initially. It's natural. Because you're still holding on to all those material things that... or one is holding on to all those material things that one really has a strong liking for. So devotional life's a little bit poisonous in the beginning. It's, you know, one doesn't have much taste for it, but one just keeps hearing and slowly the taste develops. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai.